Word.
I invite you to hear from Luke's Gospel, chapter 14, at verse 7. When he noticed how the guests chose the places of honor, he told them a parable. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor, in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, give this person your place. And then in disgrace, you would start to take the lowest place. But when you arrive, go and sit down at the lowest place so that when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, move up higher. Then you will be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. He said also to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you will be blessed because they cannot repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Now, one of the dinner guests on hearing this said to him, blessed is anyone who will eat bread in the kingdom of God. The word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. So, sitting at the kids' table has often been looked at as the lowest place at family get-togethers. You know, the good china is never found on that table. And the guests usually drink from plastic cups. And we can't, because we can't really give them china because they'll break it, right? So, you know, it's just one of those places that, see how it's lower? It's always lower. And their table has this beautiful tablecloth. No tablecloth on the kids' table. So it's easy cleanup. As young kids, we assumed that this was normal, okay? I come from a family, my mother was a child of 12 children. I had lots of aunts and uncles and cousins, and the kids' table was sometimes larger than the adult table because there were so many kids. And we thought it was fine. You know, this was a great time to see our cousins. We could even eat with our fingers and not get in trouble. You know, so for us, it really wasn't a big deal. Now, we go and we eat at my mother-in-law's and my father-in-law's often. We have spaghetti on Sundays. And they have a very small house, and, you know, you can only fit so many people around the table. So the kids used to get these TV tray dinners, and that was the kids' table, okay? So they always sat in the front room with all these TV trays. And later, as they got it growing up, you know, there was no more kids at the tables because the kids were all growing up and they were moving out and they were, so there was really no kids' table. But then Crystal would come home from college or Mary would decide to come over and Albert and Cheyenne would lose their spot. Yeah, yeah. We try to accommodate them, okay? So, like, we put them on this little tiny stool in the corner, you know, so they can sit at the table with us. It's not an honored place. They don't like it. A lot of times they argue and they say, what is age? Really, it's just a number. So for my adult children and my teenage children, this can cause a fight. They want to be treated like adults. They want to be treated like the honored just like the adults that are sitting at a table. So let me ask you a question. Have you ever been offended by the way you were treated? Not just when you were a kid. But how about when that cashier shows you contempt and you didn't do anything wrong? And you look at it and you're like appalled because you're like, the customer's always right. Why is she treating me wrong? Okay? And what about, have you ever given something to somebody and you felt disrespected? I found this little thing, Rodney Dangerfield, you know, that, yeah, no respect. That was his one-liner. He was famous for his one-liner. Have you ever gotten to a place where you just didn't feel respected? You know, maybe you were disrespected because, you gave something to someone to borrow and they brought it back broken. something like that. There's all times in which we have all felt disrespected in some way. But have you ever given something to somebody and they did not treat you with the respect that you believed that you deserved? I want to tell you a story. This is Safe Harbor Homeless Shelter in Carlisle, PA. Some of the ladies in the church came to me, this was years ago, and said, we want to help feed the homeless. And we heard that we could go one time a month and feed everybody in this shelter. And it's kind of a cool shelter because each room has like 4 or 5 beds and it's family groups. So groups of family stays in each room. And they just couldn't wait. They just wanted to do it. And I said, sure. I said, I think that's a great idea for us to go and do this. So every month, they got together. There was no kitchen there, so they had to bring their own food cooked and everything. And we would go every month. So about third month come along, and for some reason, I couldn't go. I can't remember if it was a band concert or something like that that I couldn't go. And I didn't think anything of it because they were doing pretty well, you know. And so I was kind of impressed with how well they were doing. And but lo and behold, Wednesday night come and they cornered me. They said, we have a problem. I was like, oh, great. What's wrong? They said, people are totally complaining and we don't know what to do. We had this lady come through the line. We were serving spaghetti. And they said, I'm gluten-free. Do you have an extra meal for me? Do you have an alternative? And we're thinking, dude, we're giving you a free meal. And then some guy comes up and says, hey, by the way, I don't like sitting with these people. Can you deliver that to my room? No, it was pretty bad. They were totally unappreciative for all the work that they were putting in to go and to feed these families. So one lady told me she felt so unappreciated that she believed that they should stop going. They were really upset. Although our culture tends to be casual, we do still have a few etiquette rules as to where we sit. I mean, sometimes they're good, right? I mean, we go to a wedding and a bride and groom sits at the table and they do that so we can see them, right? So we can see the dress and all that. When I was growing up, my dad always sat at the head of the table. I don't know why. He just always did. But it was like that. And then, you know, but sometimes it's good. I mean, sometimes you want to put somebody where they can be gotten to easily, you know. Maybe the party's about them. Maybe it's their birthday or something like that. I mean, we have all kinds of different reasonings behind seating arrangements. I know in our common meal, we reserve a table for our elderly because it's easy for them to get to the line first and get back so that they're not, like, in the back or anything. So, I mean, there is times in which we make seating arrangements that try to accommodate people so that it becomes easier. We have handicapped seating, all kinds of things like that. But as we look at this parable, there are a few cultural norms I want to tell you about. There are 3 aspects of the power and social relations in the Hellenistic culture. The first one here is there is a quest for honor that was an integral part of the Greek culture. There was a concept among the elite associated with a warrior ideal, which created a climate of constant competition to win honor. The winners received public office and the other expressions of status, like seats of honor at a feast and other social arenas. So this was, you know, and we have that here now in our culture, but now remember, these are just social norms. There's no rule book or anything else, but this was just the social norm of the time. Our second one is that a system of patronage governs social relationships. So one's position in society is not based on universal human rights, but one's place in a personal hierarchy. People of lower status than the elite were relegate to the elite patron for help. Like, they were their bosses. They gave them loans. They helped them out a lot. And so repayment for being treated that way was you were expected to have loyalty and public support. Okay? So this is the second aspect of it. The third one is that social interaction was ruled by requirement of balance mutuality. Now, that says repus, whatever, because I can't say that word. So, you can say it. Everyone say it. Repus, yeah, that one. Yeah. Anyway, whether implied or specified as a social rule, repayment for any kindness or benefit to the recipient was expected. Okay? It's like my son. He mows the grass, and then he holds his hand out. And I'm like, what are you holding your hand out for? He wants me to pay him to mow the grass. Okay? It's the same thing. It's the same thing. No matter what you do, you want some kind of something to come back to. So, I don't want to lose my place here. Okay. So, as we keep these things in mind, okay, we want to turn to the story that Jesus is observing the table set for the large feast. Okay, so there's my clear one. He begins to notice that the guests choosing their seats, and he decides to use this moment as an example parable. We are used to parables being about unknown people and unknown times. We have the prodigal son, right? It was just a story that Jesus was telling to make us understand. Or how about the widow that lost the coin, the lost coin? Those are stories that unknown people, unknown times, but it helps us to understand something. Jesus tells a story to teach about the kingdom of God. So this parable is a little different because he is using the situation around him to get his point across. So he's seeing things that are going on and saying, hey, let me tell you something. And then he starts using it as an example. So he notices, when we notice how the guests choose their place of honor, he told them a parable. And then he moves to starting to tell this parable. He says, so, like, you know, when you're invited by someone at a wedding guest, like, don't show up and sit in the bride and groom seat, okay? Because that's really not your place. Because then someone's going to come over and say, dude, that is for the bride and groom, and you need to move, okay? So there's this sense in which it's like, don't show up to places and just decide that you're going to be the most important in where you sit, but because what someone will do is the host will have to come over and say, excuse me, you need to leave, somebody else is supposed to sit there, and in the disgrace, you walk away. Now remember, it's really important to, that is not the right slide. Wow, that was crazy. Okay, now remember, it is important to Luke that we interpret Jesus' words as a teaching focused on the kingdom of God. Because if we take our eyes off of this, and we heard this in the pre-reflections class, if we take our eyes off of the fact that he is teaching something about the kingdom of God, we can decide that this is just advice on how to be exalted. And we know that Jesus isn't doing that. Jesus responds in this section in light of the common practice of seeking the seat of honor, but Jesus meets the practice with criticism. By exalting oneself to a place of honor without invitation may disgrace you when the host says, give this person your seat. Then there is no choice but to be lowered from one that thought they should be. The competition of being seen as honored drives the guest to assume that they are more significant than those that are in attendance. Did you hear that? People that do that, they believe that they are more significant than those that are there in attendance. It's important to Luke that we interpret Jesus as focused on the kingdom of God. I keep saying that because I think it's really important. If we don't do that, we really do run the case. Culpepper writes, and that's the slide. That's Jesus. He's a coach. I know, isn't it cute? Okay, Culpepper writes, Jesus is not merely coaching the guest on how to play the game of gaining public recognition. Okay? That's not what's going on. He says, The late Fred Craddock comments also, he says, taking the low seat because one is humble is one thing, while taking the low seat as a way to move up is another. Strategic positioning is the way of our host culture. And so doing a cost and benefit analysis when we're making decisions about relationships is a common practice. Our actions are all others can be, our actions are all others can observe. It's the only thing that people can see of us. The deeper question is, what are our intentions? Did you notice that it is not for the guest to take the place of honor, but it is the host's job to bestow it? What could this be saying about the kingdom of God? Jesus comes to the point of his parable. All who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Culpepper points out that this statement is set in a future tense. And in that future tense, it gives us a clue that this is beyond an immediate situation to a reversal of values that we find in the kingdom of God. Luke 8:14, later on in Luke, he helps us by telling us sort of the same thing when he tells us the Jesus parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector. I don't know if you remember that one, but here's the tax collector. Oh, Lord, please forgive me. I need you, and I need you to be in my life. And then there's the Pharisee. Oh, Lord, at least I'm not like the tax collector. You see the difference? The difference is that the one who comes to God must come humbly, acknowledging his own deficiency before God, for God will not turn him away. How do we know we are taking the lower seat out of humility and not strategy? What kind of mindset do we need to practice in true Christ-like humility? C.S. Lewis once said, listen to this, true humility is not thinking less of yourself. Do you hear that? True humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is thinking of yourself less. You hear the difference? But there's another part to this. There's another side of the table. There's the host, okay? So we've talked about the guests and their behavior, and now on the other side of this table is the host. In the previous text, the host was the one that gives honor or shame depending on the actions of the guest. The issue now moves to motivation for invitation. Jesus addressing the social norm, which was the common fact that hosts would invite those who would reciprocate the invitation. So he invited, it's like this big circle. You know, I invite you, you invite me, and we're happy friends, right? And so that was his motivation for inviting. Craddock writes, hosting was an act by which one person gained power over others and put them in his debt. Alan Culpepper says it another way. Hosts are no more free from the quest of recognition than the guests. Even as guests, we're challenged to negotiate strategies for seating. So too is the host challenged by creating a guest list. Invite certain people, and it could ruin your reputation. Or if somebody turns down your invitation, you could be in social ruin. One can then conclude that a host in Luke's setting of the parable would not invite those that cannot reciprocate. And in this social context, there are strings attached. Jesus challenges a rethink of how one chooses the guest list. Do not invite those that can reciprocate. So, Jesus introduces the new guest list. Those on this list are the lowest, the disrespected, or the most unhonored. That's a new word, by the way. Unhonored within society. The elderly widow, the crippled, the lame, the beggars, the ones that sit outside of the temple and beg. Those that have nothing to gain, nothing to give. And so when you invite them, there's no way they can give back to you. Much like this contrast, we are a people. If we are going to be a people that where, if we, I'm sorry, I just got totally lost. Okay, the elderly widow, the crippled, the lame, the beggars in the temple, much like the contrast, are we, what kind of people are we going to be? And how are we going to practice? Instead of inviting out of self-gain, the host invites out of true generosity of the soul. In the 14th verse of the text, one sees the blessing that follows and the rethinking of the guest list. Instead of the host as having calculated self-interest, Jesus identifies hospitality as generosity. What motivates this host to be so generous that thinks no honor for himself? People may try to arrive at the answer at how to become humble. I did a Google search. There are a lot of information on how you can be humble. A lot of memes in which you can find. But I think that Jesus's way of humble is the way. The answer is found in Paul's letter to the Philippians, when he quotes what some believe as one of the oldest hymns in the church by saying, "Who being in very nature of God did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on the cross." So what kind of host and guest should the people of God be? I think that humility and generosity go hand in hand with this. Because in the parable, Jesus is the host. He is the generous host that welcomes anyone in, regardless of what you can give to him or what you can offer to anybody. He's the generous host. But first, this is what he did. He humbled himself to whatever he needed to do, and now he has the right to be that host. And he invites us all, regardless of who we are, what status in social media or social society that we have, regardless if we have no way of paying him back, he invites us all. So what kind of host and guest should the people of God be? If we are truly a people in the way of Jesus, truly a people of this foot-washing, cross-carrying, or thorn-wearing Messiah, then we too are called to a humble generosity that is not thinking less of ourselves. Hear that? Not thinking less of ourselves, but thinking about ourselves less. Because when we don't have the time to think of ourselves, guess what we do? We think of others. It leaves us room and places in which we can then begin to think of others. I thought about the example, Mother Teresa. How she just thought of others. Could it be that simple? One of the dinner guests, on hearing this, said to him, "Blessed is anyone who will eat the bread in the kingdom of heaven." And truly, I can say that too. I can't wait. Blessed are we who seated it. But the important thing for us to remember right now is the kingdom of heaven is now. The kingdom of God is now. We are to practice it now. So as we open our hearts in generosity and in humble generosity, we become examples of exactly what Jesus was trying to get across in this parable. Thank you. Now, would you like to stand?